these rumbles can propagate over quite some distances. So our idea is to really establish acoustic monitoring systems where we can maybe monitor migration routes or early warning systems.
Welcome everyone to a new episode of Acoustic World, the podcast which explores the discoveries in the field of bioacoustics, because the world has always spoken, we just need to listen. I am Marco Maiolini, and in today's episode we will speak with Professor Angela Stoger of the University of Vienna. A herd of elephants is moving across the savannah. The sound is clear and vivid. The soft thud of the step, maybe a distant trumpet. But there is another layer of communication happening far below your hearing. Elephants also use infrasound, vocalization at low frequency that can travel across kilometers, allowing them to stay in contact over long distances. What seems like silent to us is, for them, a constant exchange of information, coordinating movement, maintaining social bond, and warning each other of danger. Because the sound lies at the limit of human hearing, this hidden layer of communication remains inaccessible for a long time. But today, bioacoustics allow us to detect this signal, not only in the wild, but also in controlled environments like zoos, where we can study elephant communication in details and use this knowledge to improve their welfare and conservation. But how do these infrasound actually work? Are all elephant vocalization this low frequency range or only specific ones? And how do scientists manage to study something we cannot even hear? To understand more about infrasound and how elephants communicate, in today's episode, we will speak with the group leader of mammal communication and professor for zoo conservation science, Angela Stoger of the University of Vienna. Welcome, Angela, to Acoustic World.
Thanks for inviting me.
Angela, I was explaining a bit in the introduction, but let's start from there. What are infrasounds?
Infrasound is any type of sound that is inaudible to us humans. So in principle, the definition is ultrasonic is everything that is too high for us humans to perceive. Infrasound is everything that is too low. And it's from 20 hertz and below.
We explored in the previous episode of this podcast with Rachele Nieri that vibrations are meaningful signal too. Are infrasound connecting with vibrational signal? And if so, can we talk about multimodality, so signal using different sensorial pathways?
Yes, definitely. So the low frequencies are suggested to propagate also via the ground, via the soil. But yet this statement cannot be generalized per se because it heavily depends on the type of soil. If you have, for example, like in Etosha National Park, where most of this study has been conducted, but it's very arid, it's very dry, the soil is so hard that it's almost like concrete-like, then it, particularly the low frequencies, can travel quite far. But we did some experiments in Victoria Falls. It was very rainy, the soil was not hard, it was like you could like easily go into it, put your sensors into it, so and then. After like 30 meters, we couldn't really detect any strong seismic signals anymore. And also in this case, the low frequency components did not propagate that well. So I think it strongly depends on the type of soil and its condition.
So they use vibration as well, but the transmission depends on the environmental and ground conditions. Anyway, elephants are among the most remarkable users of infrasound. But I'm wondering, do elephants always communicate in the infrasound, or are only some vocalizations emitted in this range?
That's a very good question. And in principle, when elephants produce rumbles, that's also what we heard before. It sounds like a thunder a little bit. These vocalizations do contain like infrasonic components. Let's turn it like that. So per se, when the elephant is producing the sound, there is no vocalization that is purely in the infrasonic range. So there are always upper harmonics that reach our audible range that can be perceived by us humans. What happens is that these the vocalizations with infrasonic components propagate quite far, and the low frequency in air, I'm now talking about airborne propagation, the low frequency propagates further than the higher frequencies. So when the elephant is like in some more distance, let's say several hundred meter, 1 kilometer, then only the low frequencies propagate that far, and then we humans can really not perceive it anymore. But the elephants can, because they can perceive the low frequencies. And then it's a truly secret, you know, sometimes people say it's a secret language or the secret speech of elephants. Yes, but only in the distance. If you're close to an elephant, you will perceive most vocalizations because you can perceive the upper harmonics.
Oh, that's super fascinating. And now I have just another question that popped out in my mind. And what is the range of frequency that an elephant can perceive then?
What we know so far, our colleagues from the US who made audiologies on elephants, it's up to 10,000 hertz. So that's the highest frequencies. And trumpets and some roars, these are vocalizations that are, of course, they don't even have any components in the infrasonic range. They are higher. They start at like 300, 400 hertz, but they can go up quite high. So the upper harmonics, even in rumbles, if they are really loud, they can reach up to, 8,000 hertz. But it's only the upper harmonics.
So even though they have bigger ears, they are below the human range that goes to 20,000 hertz. And studying a sound that you cannot even hear seems challenging. What we learned from Marina Schumann, that ultrasonic sounds are studied with audio camera and slowing down the recordings. Are the same tools used for infrasounds?
Similar, yes. So right in the beginning when I started, I used to speed up the sounds in order to hear it, but we don't do this anymore. So we really have, of course, microphones that are sensible in the infrasonic range. And then we basically use sound analyzing software that can visualize the sound. I know that Marina also used like acoustic cameras. We also made use of that. So, but in the other range, we really had huge microphone arrays about 3 meters to detect the low frequencies. And that can help to visualize the calling individual. And in elephants, it also helped us to actually detect which sounds are emitted via the nasal vocal tract, the trunk, and which are emitted orally, because that made a huge difference in the acoustic structure. But that's only because the nose and the mouth are like separate from each other in the elephants.
Yeah, that's super cool. I never thought about it, but talking about that, what is the difference between a vocalization emitted with the mouth and the same vocalization type and with the most remarkable feature of elephant, the trunk?
In principle, when they rumble, so that's the most common vocalization, it's this low frequency rumbling, they can also rumble or emit the vocalization orally or nasally. And that makes a huge difference because when they use the nasal vocal tract, because of the trunk, it's strongly elongated, right? It can be 2 up to 3 meters. So from the vocal folds, and that's the source of the rumbling, to the nose tip where the rumble is emitted, it's quite a long way. And this long vocal tract emphasizes the lower frequency components. Well, when they rumble using the, like opening the mouth, then the higher frequency components are somehow more amplified. That makes a huge difference in the acoustic structure and also in the meaning, the meaning that they transmit.
So elephant communication is studied both in the wild, as you say, in the Tosha National Park in Namibia, but also in the zoo. What is the role of a zoo in this kind of research?
So we study in zoos, and I also want to mention that we also study with semi-captive elephants. These are elephants that are within their country in South Africa, for example, or in Nepal, but are used to human presence. And these different settings are important because you can do different type of research. At the zoo, for example, you experience the same individuals every day. So it's very well suited to identify individuality, also long-term individuality, because you just have the individuals there. You don't need to go and search them. Also, for example, if you are interested in how hormones have an influence on the animals, that's also something that you can study more easy in the zoo, because you can get the dung samples. Again, you can relate the vocalizations easier to the individuals because you're also closer. Another aspect is infants, so vocal ontogeny. It's very difficult in the wild to approach infants close enough to get good recordings. So these are aspects that can be done in the zoo. Of course, on the other side, there are research questions that can only be addressed with wild elephants when it really goes into what is the meaning of the vocalizations and what's the context, or vocal dialects, for example. For this, you really need to go to the wild.
Now, jumping to a topic that is a bit more personal. You studied the acoustic communication of various mammals, from cheetahs to giraffes. But the one that you focus most is definitely elephants. Why did you choose to focus on this animal?
Yeah, that was a bit, how do you say? Sometimes they just come into your life and they come to stay. So I initially wanted to become a marine biologist and study marine mammals. But I figured out that for my master thesis, it would be easier and faster, because I really wanted to finish, faster to do something here in Vienna. So I started to work with elephants. But as it is, when you dive into a topic and you learn about them, then it gets more and more fascinating and more interesting. So after my master's, I decided to also do my PhD working with elephants, and in this case, elephant calves. Yeah, and then of course you have your first publications, then funding comes in, and somehow you feel yourself into this, role where, okay, you have publications, you get funding. Funding was easier to get with elephants because I was known for doing my research with elephants. And so it was really hard to get funding for cheetahs, for example, and for other species, because you always need to, it's always challenging to get into new species. And at some point you have all the network and everyone, in the elephant community. And I guess that's why then elephants just are my main model species. And they are just fantastic, and there's still so much more to study on and to find out.
And then study this enormous creature is definitely fascinating, from their vocalization to their complex society. But it brings challenge as well. What is the biggest challenge in this project?
The biggest challenge is that they are dangerous. So you always need to be aware that you're working with a huge animal. I mean, male elephants can have up to 5,000-6,000 kilograms, and they are just so strong. And it doesn't take much for an elephant to seriously injure a human or even kill a human. And I think that's the biggest challenge, that you need to, if you record in the wild, you try to be as close as possible to have good recordings and the background noise is not too loud. But then you need to kind of like see, okay, how far can I go? How do they react? So it's a constant. You have to have a good feeling of the animals. You have to be able to read the behavior. When do they start to feel uncomfortable? When do they start to tell you a bit with the ears, with the body posture, that you're getting too close, and then better safe than sorry. So in case they seem uncomfortable with me, I pull back and then record from a bit more distance.
I can understand that they are fascinating as well as dangerous, and holding back seems a good move. You already talked about the different sites where you study elephant, and I can imagine that you experience funny or unpredictable moments. Is there one that stick with you?
Yes, there are actually many funny situations with elephants. Sometimes it's the calves, the elephant calves and the mothers. And I was sitting and observing a mother with two calves. One was smaller, about 1 year old, the other one was already 5 year old. And they were both fighting to get milk from the mother. And I mean, the five-year-old is, it can eat everything and it's fine. But somehow it was like siblings, the smaller one wanted to suckle, the bigger one too. They have been on the same side of the mother. So they started a little fight. And of course it ended that the bigger one just pushed the smaller one. The smaller one was like roaring and like, wah, screaming in this kind of way. And I could feel the mother was like, oh. Just like I could feel her, because I'm a mother, and I could feel her, that she was just innerly like rolling her eyes, and then she just moved on. And I think like these are things that sometimes, of course, you don't want to anthropomorphize, but sometimes it's so similar. And yeah, when they are playing with each other and one falls over, they are just also really funny to watch.
Yeah, funny indeed. And you studied elephant communication both in the wild, semi-captive, and in the zoo. To summarize, what are the pros and the cons of studying a species in these three different settings?
Mm-hmm. There are always pros and cons, and that's why I combine everything. So I think in the wild, as I said, of course, it's more difficult to know who is vocalizing, because if you have a big group of elephants, sometimes there can be 200, 300 individuals at the waterhole. It really gets chaotic. So in the future, we will maybe use more collars that have microphones, like onboard systems, where we can get better recordings. It's sometimes dangerous to get close, particularly if you work with males and mothers that have small babies, because they are very protective. On the other hand, you can observe the diversity of the behavior. And in the zoo, or in semi-captive situations, it's safer to approach them. Also, because you are never really safe, because in the semi-captive situations, there is no enclosure, there is no boundary. There, we can have like experimental setups and we can control better the context, for example. If we separate a group for 10 minutes and then we let them reunite, we know pretty well that we have contact calls and then greeting situations. And that's what in the wild, you never really know who vocalizes to whom, who addresses which individual. So that's difficult. And in the zoo, as I said, it's very suitable in order to learn individual characteristics, age characteristics, and of course, there are different situations, and everything is interesting, because in the zoo, sometimes the elephants tend to imitate more. You know, they tend to be more flexible with their voice, because sometimes they get bored and then they start to play around with their voice as well. So it all has advantages. And so that's why it's important to combine everything to get the complete picture.
On this topic, what is the role of this structure on the conservation of these animals? Can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yes, there are different opinions on it, but I think the most important aspect is research, that we really have a very important research source that we can work more experimentally and find out details that would be impossible otherwise. So we really learn about the vocalizations, and as in human voice, you can get a lot of info out of the voice of elephants as well. I can tell an elephant, you know, is it a calf, is it an infant? Is the elephant aroused? Is it calm? And we can probably also tell if the elephant is stressed based on its voice. And I think that's important for the welfare, because if zoo elephants are stressed and we can tell based on their voice, then we do have these indications without we need dung samples or we need blood samples. So it could be used for non-invasive monitoring. And this monitoring might also be important for wild elephants, because I told before that these rumbles can propagate over quite some distances. So our idea is, and now we are working hard on that, to really establish acoustic monitoring systems where we can maybe monitor migration routes, or early warning systems, that we have this early warning system, which of course needs to be quite cost effective, and we are really working on this right now, that like in a village you can have such a system, and when an elephant is detected by, like an elephant rumble is detected, then this system basically detects the rumble, identifies it's an elephant, and then there can be an alarm that people at least know that elephants are close by, and this could maybe help to mitigate human-elephant conflict in some areas.
I love that science can help in human-animal conflict, like this one. Now, we start the episode hearing a herd of elephants walking in the savannah. What can infrasound tell us about these animals, and how can study this signal help us in their conservation?
Yes, so our hope is that we can really make use of their rumbles that propagate quite some distances to detect them, like non-invasively on a big scale. So, of course, we use GPS to monitor the migrating routes of elephants and also of so-called problem elephants that tend to go into villages, into the cities in Victoria Falls, for example. There is no fence around the city, national parks all around. The elephants at night mainly male elephants, will move into the city, and then people are killed on a regular basis. So that's really an issue. So coloring elephants is usable, but you cannot color each elephant, right? So we hope that in addition to the colors and to the GPS, we hope that in addition, there will be an acoustic monitoring system that can help us to detect elephants on a larger scale. So that's our hope and that we are working for.
Best of luck for this project. And with this, I would like to thank you, Angela, for helping us to discover this hidden world of this majestic creature, I will say. And thank you all for listening to the show this week. Don't forget to subscribe to our Spotify and Instagram channel to get the latest news about the podcast and some behind the scene. Acoustic World is an independent podcast written and realized by Marco Maiolini. Music by Marco Ravagnan. Graphic designer Emanuele Barchesi. Social media manager Laura Maiolini. I am Marco Maiolini and see you all to the next episode.